Today on Family Talk.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh, sitting in for Dr. Dobson today. Now, before we get started, many of you know that Family Talk is completely listener-supported broadcast outreach, and your tax-deductible financial contributions make this broadcast possible. Now is a great opportunity for you to come alongside us here in our ministry. Through the end of 2017, every dollar you donate will be doubled thanks to a generous matching grant. So if you give $10, that gift will be $20. If you give $50, it'll be $100, and so on. You can donate on our website at drjamesdobson.org. You can donate over the phone when you call toll-free, 877-732-6825. Again, that number is 877-732-6825. Thanks so much for your help as we continue to promote the institution of the family. Now, today's program features a speech given by Kelly Shackelford, President and CEO of First Liberty Institute, as he addressed Family Talk's annual gathering event in Colorado Springs last month. First Liberty Institute is the largest legal firm in the nation dedicated exclusively to protecting religious freedoms. Under the leadership of Kelly Shackelford, First Liberty's legal team has participated in cases all over the country, including in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. They've won more than 90% of those cases as well. Kelly Shackelford is also a highly sought-after lead counsel and public speaker. He's a frequent guest on national news and talk programs. He's been featured in the National Law Journal, the Associated Press, the New York Times, and many other publications. Let's listen now to Kelly Shackelford from First Liberty Institute on this special edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
I'm an example of the many people that get blessed by Dr. Dobson and Shirley Dobson's life. I'm a 2.5-year-old boy who lost his father, who was raised by his mother. And many people told me in high school and otherwise, God's been your father. And my mother used as many of the principles that you espouse as she could. And here I am at Dr. Dobson's event, and I told somebody yesterday, I speak all over the country, but this is the only event that I can think of that whenever I'm asked, whenever you want me here, I'm here every year you want me here, because I think that highly. You're my hero. And I just... anyway. One of the instructions I got with my deal was they said, look, you know, people might not know, you know, your group, so make sure and tell them what your group is and your personal story. So I'm going to do that before I go into what my real title is, which is an update from the front lines on religious freedom. What is First Liberty? First Liberty Institute's the largest legal organization in the country that all we do is religious freedom. That's all we do in the United States. So if you're a 9-year-old boy and you're Giovanni Rubio and you were told you can bring any book you want to school for free reading time until you bring your Bible. And then you're told you can't bring that to school during free reading time. Well, if you're a poor family like Giovanni's family, I live outside of Miami-Dade, you can't go out and hire a team of attorneys. What are you supposed to do? So we come in, we represent them, bring in the best lawyers from the country, and they do that free of charge. And so the reason is, we not only win a victory for Giovanni, which we did, but we set a precedent that protects our children and our grandchildren and affects everybody. So that's my quick summary for what we do and why we do it. How did I get involved in this? Back when I was in high school, I realized my gifts were in analytical thinking and speaking, and I thought, well, I either need to be a pastor or a lawyer. And people said, that's like a God or Satan choice, isn't it, to be a pastor or a lawyer? And, you know, I analyzed my DNA, and I thought I'd probably do better at dispensing justice than mercy, and I'd probably make a better lawyer. And I went to law school, and I should have been an average law student, intelligence-wise, but my heart was for ministry. So I find myself spending a lot of my time at my church. I was leading the discipleship ministry over the college students. This is a really bad plan. Okay, in law school, you study 24/7. You're competing with everybody else. And here I was doing this ministry thing on the side. And I'm average intelligence compared to all them. And the grades come back, and I'm making all the high grades. And God was just showing me, I want you to keep your heart for ministry, but I want you in law. And I got out, I clerked for a federal judge, which you can do for like 1 year. You sort of help the judge research and write opinions, and you get to see what it's like to be on the other side of the bench. And so that's a really unique perspective. So all the big law firms want you to come work for them. So I had all these nice offers to go work for the big law firms. And I sat in my little clerk's office, and I thought to myself, Lord, I feel like I would suffocate if I went and did that, because I don't feel like you're calling me to do that. And I remember thinking to myself, well, what do you want to do? And I thought, well, Lord, I'd like to use my legal skills and do cases, but I'd like to help pastors and churches and religious freedoms and our founding principles, and I'd even like to go to seminary part-time. And I laughed, because there was no job like that in the United States that paid you money. And two guys called me. I'd never met these guys out of the blue. And they were big partners of big law firms. They said, look, will you come to lunch? I said, sure. They said, look, we've started donating our time for religious freedom. We're getting so many calls now, we can't make a living. We're wondering, would you be willing to come on, do legal cases, help pastors, churches, religious freedoms, and our founding principles? And you can even go to seminary part-time if you want to. Now, being in my mid-20s, maybe a little immature in my faith, I said, let me pray about it. Like, that wasn't an answer to prayer. And next day I said yes, and they said, how much are you making as a clerk for a federal court? And it's $28,000. And these guys literally pitched out of their pocket to get me going as a nonprofit. 29 years later, First Liberty Institute's the largest legal organization in the country that all we do is religious freedom in the United States. This is all about what something God created, because He knew. He knew what I could have never guessed. I could never guess that we would be fighting the things we're having to fight today. But He knew it needed to be established. And so I'm just a small pawn in His great plan. And there's nothing better than that. There isn't. My plans are so bad compared to His plans. And so let me go through some basics. Why is this important? I bet everybody in here knows why religious freedom is important. There is no hope for our country if people can't hear the truth, have their lives changed, and be redeemed. Our country's going off the cliff if that doesn't happen in people's lives, right? We all know that. But you know what? Even if you're not a person of faith at all, it's important. Because our founders called this our first freedom, because they understood you lose this one, you'll lose them all. The basic way I can understand that, get this across, is the one thing that totalitarianism will never allow are citizens who hold an allegiance to one higher than the government. So whenever that type of an oppressive regime begins to take hold, the flashpoint is always going to be religious freedom. It's going to be these people that won't take a knee. And our founders understood that. So that being the key to all of our freedoms, how are we doing? Well, probably doesn't surprise you when I tell you that I've been doing this over a quarter century. I've never seen anything like the level of attacks that I'm seeing in this country. I mean, we've had two different cases where pastors actually had their sermons subpoenaed by the government, right? You've heard about some of these. One of ours was our case in Georgia. We had to hold a press conference against the attorney general to end that case and basically embarrass him and a number of other things. It's just incredible the things that are happening. I think of Audrey Jarvis. I think I've got a picture of her. Here we go. Audrey Jarvis, California girl, ordered at the state university to take her cross necklace off because, quote, it might offend someone at the school. Okay, I've had this happen, I can't tell you how many times, in schools around the country. Our most recent case is a case, you're going to think, well, surely not. I could tell you a lot of these. One of our most recent cases is a woman who was told, lives in the housing project, who was told she was not allowed to pray by the police, that she was not allowed to pray in her own home. You know, sometimes people say, oh, freedom of worship, they just want you to have the ability, the freedom to be of your faith in your home and your church. You think they're going to let you run to your home and your church and have religious freedom there? They won't let you have your freedom there. They would like to take away all your freedom. And we're having a fight on behalf of this woman who was told she could not pray in her own home in the projects. It's government housing, after all. So I thought, oh, here, now I brought this just to encourage you this morning. We do a survey of all the attacks on religious freedom every year. This just came out a couple of weeks ago. They're all citable. This is in the United States. There's like five or six pages. This is everything from a little five-year-old girl who was told to stop praying over a meal because, quote, it's not good to pray at school, to senior citizens who are actually told that their meals were going to be taken away because they were praying over their meals and they were federally funded meals, and that would violate separation of church and state. Okay? What you find, and you can go online and just look at this for free, what you find is this is in the East, it's in the West, it's in the North, it's in the South, it's young, it's old, it's everywhere. It's just pervasive. And so, I thought, what's a good way to do this? Because I don't have all the time in the world today. I'm just going to go through three quick areas, quick examples of the areas we're working on, show you quick cases to give you, because I want you to feel what's happening. Let's start with one of the most dangerous to me, which is the attacks on religious freedom in the workplace. And that is really going after people's right to make a living if you're a person of faith. And I don't care if you're an employer or an employee, you have a target on you now, right? One of our newest cases is a young lady by the name of Toni Richardson, works in a public school, who, this is why she's been punished. Because she told a fellow worker at school who goes to her church, I'll be praying for you. That person didn't complain, but her supervisor found out. There's now a letter in her file. You'd think, well, surely we went to the school and said, you know, let's just get this corrected. They said, no, we're going to fight you over this. This is inappropriate language when you're at work in the workplace. So these are the kind of things we're having to fight. Okay, schools, this is the second area I wanted to cover with you. And again, I don't have a lot of time, so I'm just going to give you one case. How many people have heard of the Coach Kennedy case? All right. This is, to me, the example for the country of what we're going through. Coach Kennedy, in the Marines, 20 years, served his country. The night before he went to be a coach, after his 20 years in the Marines, he saw Facing the Giants on the TV, and it just convicted him. And he said, Lord, after every game, the first thing I'm going to do when I go to the center of that field and shake the other coach's hand and do whatever is I'm going to go to knee and I'm going to give thanks for the privilege of coaching these young men. So for 7 years, that's what he did. Until the school sent him a letter when they found out 7 years later, and they said, if you go to a knee, you're fired. And so what did he do? He went to a knee because he made a promise to God, and he got fired. When he went out there by himself and went to a knee, he felt something happening around him, and he went, oh no, I didn't want the kids coming close to me. They'll get in trouble because there's all this thing going on. When he opened his eyes, it was the other team, their coaches and all their players were surrounding him, praying with him. But I just think this case, and if I don't know if you know what happened, we're in the Ninth Circuit, not a friendly place, right? Out of San Francisco. We knew this. They just ruled about a month ago, and this is their ruling, that coaches are never allowed to pray if anyone can ever see them. That's what they said. Not just students. They said a spectator, anyone. They said they are allowed to pray. They said this in a closet. But they are not allowed to pray if anyone can see them. Like prayer is the new pornography or something in the United States. That would, you know, we said this would mean that a teacher couldn't bow their head over their meal in the lunch cafeteria, that a Jewish teacher couldn't wear a yarmulke, that this has never been the law of the United States. It's like a religious cleansing across our country. So we're going to keep fighting. But to me, this case is really, I just think God is using this case. You know, it's the only case I know of that President Trump has tweeted about numerous times, saying this should not happen. And I just really feel like this is God saying to every believer in the United States, are you willing to take a knee for me? Are you willing to do what Coach Kennedy did? But it's an example of what's going on in our schools. Third area I wanted to cover quickly is the military. 5.5 years ago, we didn't even have a division for the military. We had to create a whole division for religious freedom in the military just because of what was happening. And there's a number of that stuff that was coming right out of here at the Air Force Academy. There are groups that formed to try to push religious freedom out of our military, which George Washington put in immediately at the beginning, knowing that if you don't have religious freedom in the military, your military is going to be very ineffective. We had a brief filed one of our cases by the general saying, not only is it not a problem, it's the reason most people join, and it's the number one thing they rely upon to be the greatest soldiers and airmen that they can be. Well, you've seen some of these cases. I mean, all the veterans' memorials are under attack if they have religious symbols now. Probably the first one was the Mojave Desert Cross, which was put up in 1934 by the hands of World War I vets. And ACLU filed a lawsuit, said, you can't have this. This is on federal land. You got to tear it down. Federal District Court, Court of Appeals said, tear it down. And so we jumped in, represented the American Legion, the VFW, the Military Order of the Purple Heart, went all the way to the Supreme Court. But if you haven't seen this picture, I want you to see this picture, because to me this is what the other side wants to do. This is what the court ordered be done while it was on appeal. Okay, that's a veterans memorial. But you can tell it's a cross, too, with a chain around the bottom and a bag over it. That's what the other, and some people say, why do you make a big deal of this? Okay, you went to the Supreme Court. You got this reversed. That memorial is back up, bag is back off. That's true. We won 5-4 with Scalia being our final vote. That tell you how close we are? You change Scalia with somebody different, this is the law in the United States of America. But we're still in a battle over this. You think, well, at least that's over. No, we had the Mount Soledad Cross out of San Diego we had to save. Now we've got the Bladensburg Cross. Here you go. Bladensburg Cross, this is outside of Maryland, put up over 90 years ago in part by money from mothers who lost their sons in World War I. The American Humanist Society has now filed a lawsuit to tear this down. We just had the oral argument in December. Two of our three judges on the Federal Court of Appeals were appointed by President Obama. One of them asked the following question. And this is in the Washington Post. So, you know, I'm not making this up, okay? They reported it. If we just cut the arms off this cross, won't that take care of any offense? So this is the mindset. So we very well could have a decision coming down, striking down veterans' memorials. I mean, and they're in every community that you can imagine. I mean, think of the bulldozing and sandblasting that would have to go on. Even in Arlington Memorial Cemetery, there's a 20-foot cross there, cross of sacrifice. There's the Argonne Cross, the Tomb of the Unknown Soldiers, says known but to God. But the problem is, this isn't just happening with symbols. It's happening internally. It's happening to try to intimidate those of faith within the service. And we're like, we've got veterans that run all through our organization, so they get really mad about this kind of stuff. And I do too, because it's like, these people are giving everything for us, and then we're going to take away their religious freedom when they need it the most? And probably one of the best, and again, I don't have time to talk about all, I'll give you one case, and that's the Oscar Rodriguez case. Oscar Rodriguez is a guy who served 33 years and as a veteran. And he came up with a speech. Have you seen the flag folding ceremonies that occur when they gently unfold? A lot of times done in private retirement ceremonies and in public things. He's got a speech that's incredible that ends, God bless our flag, God bless our troops, God bless America. Well, a guy said, would you do that at my private retirement ceremony? He said, I'd be honored to. And so he did that. And as Oscar gets up, video cameras are rolling. Remember, this is somebody's private retirement ceremony. The head of that base didn't want God mentioned on his base. He sent uniformed military to grab Oscar, physically assault him, and throw him out of the room because he was going to mention God in a private retirement ceremony. Good news is we're winning case after case after case in the military. Guys like Mikey Weinstein are running into a hole. We're turning this thing around because the law is on the side of these people who serve us in the country. And we're still having a fight. That's still a case. There's other cases. But I guess I just want to say at this point, some of you are thinking, Dr. Dobson, thank you for inviting the depressing speaker, the Shackelford guy. Okay, so let me get to the good news. The good news is we have a method of dealing with this, and it's not a theory. It's something we've been doing for 20 years, and it's working. And that is, if you were to look at the nonprofit legal groups, I don't care if they're left-wing or right-wing or what their issue is, whether the ACLU, Sierra Club, whatever, same model. Raise as much money as you can raise. Hire as many attorneys as you can with that money. Put them in an office in D.C. or New York or L.A. Fly them around the country. Cover as many cases as you can cover. That's not our model. Our model is there's all these people who love the Lord, who went to law school because they wanted to stand for what was right. 30 years later, these are the best litigators at the best law firms in the world. And they've done honorable work for major corporations, clients, etc. But they've never gotten to do a case for the kingdom. We go and we sit down with them and we say, we know who the best of the best are. And we say, if we give you everything you need, are you willing to give your time? They say, sign me up. I've been waiting 35 years. We know what's going to happen when we give them that first case. For the first time in their life, all their talent, all their gifts, all their training is lined up with their faith and their love for their country. It's kind of unfair, but we now know we have them for the rest of their lives as one of our volunteer attorneys. And they're the big partner. They give cover to the younger attorneys. They get to do all those cases, for, you know, because they got permission now. So if you were to look at the top 100 law firms, I mean, you'd find a significant percentage don't just donate their time on our cases. They fight each other over who gets to donate their time. And my original reason for doing this was sort of, I like to squeeze everything I can out of a nickel. And sure enough, on an average case, for every $10,000 we spend, we get $60,000 donated. We're literally multiplying the Lord's resources, you know, 6 to 1 in those cases. But the thing I didn't count on was the win-loss ratio. If you watch all these nonprofits, you'll find they'll win, they'll lose, they'll win, they'll lose. Our win rate now for over 17 years in a row has been above 90%, which is unheard of. And it's because this is the body of Christ. This is the body of Christ. And when we have a case in Montana, our attorney lives in Montana. He's the biggest law firm in Montana. When he goes into court and looks at the judge, it's his former law partner. Okay, only the body of Christ can be everywhere like that, okay? When the ACLU guy flies in from New York City, he's playing in an away game. And so, and plus the law's on our side with religious freedom. So we're winning these cases. So the main point before I get to the other point I want to talk to you about is if we're willing to stand up, we can win. We can win. We're winning over and over again if we're willing to stand up. That's really the question. And I'll show you real quickly. I look at the Leiningers. We started as a group in Texas. The Leiningers know they were back with us at the very beginning. And about our win rate was so high, the Lord was pulling us to go national. There's so much need. And so when we started this, this is our first year. It's like 6 years ago when we started going national. These are our cases. Let me show you just 5 years later. Okay? And that was turning away over 60% of the requests because we couldn't keep up with the need. But as you see these increases, realize 90% victories left and right when people are willing to stand up. So I want you to be encouraged by that. Now, in addition to this normal job we have of doing all these cases, we've got, I think, 6 cases on the way to the Supreme Court right now that they're looking at that some are 95% chance probably they're going to take. That's our normal job. Then this guy got elected, this Trump guy. And we're like, having a meeting going, okay, we weren't expecting this. We were praying for it. You know, we weren't expecting it. And we said, how many opportunities are there now for advancing religious freedom? And it was over 200 that we were seeing of things we could do. And we were perplexed, really. I had to go to my board. I said, you know, we've got 130 judge seats waiting to be filled for life. We've got policy, we can slide people and they can put it into policy in the highest agencies in our government like that affects everybody. We got things that could affect us for 30 to 40 years, and we've got the same employees we had and the same cases we had. So our budget, my board said, here, what do you need for the next 2 years? Because that's all we know we got. And I said, I need like $4.5 million. And literally they kicked in, they and a few others, about half to say, start this. Just start on it. But just, I want you to be encouraged. Our model is working. We're winning. Look at what's happening. There is a window of opportunity the Lord has given us, but it's a window of opportunity. And we have got to take advantage of it because we don't know when it's going to close. I hope it doesn't close for, you know, at least 6, 8, 10, whenever years. But all I know is I know it's open for 2 years until there's the next election. And so we're going as fast as we can. And so be in prayer. I think there's about 50 judicial nominees right now. The only thing that can keep us from things that we could never dream of is if the Senate allows us blocking and doesn't allow these people through. That blockade is starting to crack. McConnell is starting to move back. But be in prayer. But be encouraged. If we're willing to stand, we can win. We will win. And to serve the Lord, we win by serving the Lord no matter what. But I think the Lord's given us a really special opportunity to change our country for our children and our grandchildren. God bless you.
We We hope you've been encouraged by what Kelly Shackelford and the team at First Liberty Institute are doing across the United States to defend religious freedoms. This is Roger Marsh filling in for Dr. James Dobson today here on Family Talk. If you'd like to learn more about First Liberty or you know someone who could use their help, go to our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. You'll find a link for their website as well, drjamesdobson.org, and hit the broadcast page. Did you know that Family Talk has a listener feedback line? Dr. Dobson loves hearing how these programs have affected you and your family. So please call our listener feedback line toll-free at 844-823-2669. Once you're connected, you'll have 2 minutes to share any testimonies or comments you would like to leave there. Again, that number is 844-823-2669. As we conclude today's program, I want to remind you to join us again tomorrow to hear a great conversation featuring Dr. James Dobson and Dr. Everett Piper, the president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. The two will discuss the so-called snowflake generation, as written about in Dr. Piper's new book called Not a Daycare. That's coming up next time on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks for listening.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.